Okay, let's get this meeting going. Can people hear me?
Yeah.
Welcome. Welcome to the opening meeting. If you're a bit confused, you're like, but we've had meetings the whole day. Nah, that's not how we roll. This is the opening meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous Convention 2023 Pretoria. Makes you happy. Okay, before we move on to the admin, can we welcome, last time I forgot, people, our fellows from Namibia. Uganda. Botswana. Western Cape. Eastern Cape. Zulu lost in the house. Gauteng! And last but not least, Pretoria. Can we also give some love to our Al-Anon? Last but not least, to our visitors, our non-alcoholics, and just because they don't drink, there's no reason to judge them. These people are human beings as well. So can you give some love to the non-alcoholics? Thank you. So before we go to the opening, just a bit of admin. Toilets, if you don't know by now, ladies to the left, outside to the left, gents outside to the right. Smoking outside the building like any other area in South Africa. And please can you switch off all cell phones or put them on mute. But don't put them too far away because you'll find out soon enough. Look at all the drinkers. They've forgotten to put their cell phones on mute. Look at one, Johan. Look at Uncle Rod. We got you. And then a reminder, there are no refreshments allowed in the venue. And then lost and found is closed. And we'll reopen tomorrow. Some people have lost cell phones, but there are cell phones in lost and found. Unfortunately, you can only get them tomorrow. So you'll have to keep coming back. You'll have to come back tomorrow if you've lost your cell phone. Okay. And then, I love this. The German meeting, right? The German meeting, a nation, is it a nation? A people who are known for their organization and doing things like so. Wow. The German meeting, they got the times wrong. Yeah. The Germans got it wrong. So the meeting won't be on Sunday, but it will be on Saturday. Make me scared for a moment. And then I think that is all the admin for the day. So we're going to get into the serious business. I look at the newcomers. Look at the newcomers. Welcome. Welcome to... Are these Kryptonians? Yeah, we've heard about the Kryptonians. They're a very calm people. So we're going to open the meeting with Amazing Grace. But before you all start singing Easy Tigers, we're going to ask our technicians if they can lower the lights. We're going to ask people if they can whip out their cell phones. We don't have candles. Ooh. Oh, that's very lowered. But that's cool. That's cool. We're going to ask, oh, that's pretty. You should see from this side. We're going to ask people to whip out their cell phones. We can't have candles because we might mess up the floors. And those will be our symbolic candles. No more cell phones. Come on, people. Participate in your own recovery. Ooh. I really wish you all could see this. It's so cool. I don't know what's wrong with this group. They're keeping their cell phones off. And then we're going to ask Hannes. Hannes, if you can hear us in the background. if we can stand and open the meeting with Amazing Grace. Just wait for the cue. The church goers, they were feeling it. They could feel the spirit. Yeah. They were there. They were. Yeah, no, they remember what it's like to have a hangover. They're grateful. Okay, sorry, I just lost my place. Whew. We are going to start off kind of different. We are going to start off with a sobriety countdown. Yeah. No, wow. Wow, people are so jaded, it's like, yeah, I'm sober, so what? Don't take your recovery for granted, people. So this is how we're going to do the sobriety countdown. For those of you who are feeling nervous and shy, don't be. Now that we're sober, we can't remember past tomorrow. You know, it's only when we're drunk that we remember stuff. So we're going to start. We'd just like to welcome the people who are new to Alcoholics Anonymous, new to a new way of life. So, we are going to start with, for those in their first week of sobriety, can we ask you to stand? Please don't be shy. Let us love you. There we go. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Life is about to change. Yeah. Oh yeah, okay, I got an amen right here. Can we ask the people in their first year of sobriety to stand, please? Come on, come to stand. Give us some love. Now keep standing. this is the future of Alcoholics Anonymous. Yes, you are our future. Stand strong. And can we get, can all sit, the future can sit? Can we get people in the first 5 years of sobriety? Let's see the hope of Alcoholics Anonymous. That is the hope of Alcoholics Anonymous. Can we get people in the 10 to 20 years of sobriety? Can we see the strength of Alcoholics Anonymous? Thank you. We missed the 5 to 10. I guess that's just an hour, whatever. Okay. Can we get the hour, whatever, 5 to 10 of Alcoholics Anonymous? Ah, 5 to 10 is that, don't you forget about us. Yeah, this is not whatever. Okay, can we try this again? 10 to 20, I did 10 to 20, the strength of AA. Stand up again. Just clap on to it. Can we get those who are 20 years and over the experience of Alcoholics Anonymous? Stand up. Alcoholics Anonymous to remain standing, please. Okay, let's do a bit of conduct. Yeah, no, it's hard. Just somewhere like here off my back. Just hang on a bit longer. So can we get us those who are 25 years or under to sit? Unbelievable. Okay, those between 35 and 30. Can you give them a round of okay, now we're getting to the serious numbers. Yeah, there are lots of people standing, people. Newcomers, do you see this? Do you see this? Okay. We've got those 40 to 35. Can we give them some love and take them? Okay, there's still people standing. Okay. 41 and down, can we get some love? Yeah. 42 years. Just wave your hands if you're still able to. People just forgotten to sit down. Okay, let's see. 48. Let's see. Oh, 49. Oh. 50. Oh. 51. Gratitude to what God and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous can do. Keep that man sober one day at a time for 52 years. Is there 53? Where's another? Where's 52? Rise up the back. Is there 53? Okay, so to the newcomers, how do they do it? One day at a time. But some people forgot to it. Before we move on, will the owner of a car, license plate KZ 09 MVGP, in the undercover parking, your lights are on. No? Oh, maybe it's Eleanor. Or maybe it's a new car and they don't know their license plate yet. Okay. But thanks for everyone's sobriety. We're sober. That is an amazing one day at a time. Now there was a time some of us, we couldn't make it to 2 days. Yeah. If you got to 2 days, you're like, I'm cured. If I can go 2 days without drinking, I can drink today. Yeah. Okay, we've done our sobriety countdown. And then to move on to those fellows, those of ours, the members of our tribe who passed on, the role of honor, and these are the people who passed on sober.
Yes.
They died alcoholics, but they died sober alcoholics.
Can
we? Yes. Yes, and could we get the aircon on too? Menopause is hitting some people. Okay. We have David T, who passed on in January 2020 of the Race and Talk Group in Pietermaritzburg, KwaZulu-Natal. We have Little, December 2022, Stanton Group, Rosebank, Gauteng. Hilton, June 2020, Kilani or Milnerton Group, Cape Town. Ryan, January 2021, Civic Group, Pietermaritzburg, KwaZulu-Natal. Moon, January 2021, Cokesville Group, Pietermaritzburg, KwaZulu-Natal. Colin, August 2020, Civic Group, Pietermaritzburg, KwaZulu-Natal. Marvin, October 2022, Civic Group, Pietermaritzburg, KwaZulu-Natal. JT, November 2022, Civic Group, Pietermaritzburg, KwaZulu-Natal. Chris, March 2019, Civic Group, Pietermaritzburg, KwaZulu-Natal. Saki P, March 2017, The Luri Group, George, Eastern Cape. Alec S, July 2022, The Luri Group, George, Eastern Cape. Chris R, August 2022, Benmore Group. Noel E, April 2018, Bonito Group. Gary C, November 2018, Belito Group. Roland, January 2020, Moroleti Group, Pretoria, Gauteng. Uncle Lau, November 2021, Glenridge Group, Durban, KwaZulu-Natal. Uncle AC, September 2022, Montclair Group, Durban, KwaZulu-Natal. Chris B, July 2017, Pretoria North Group, Pretoria, Gauteng. Chantal, July 2021, Durban North, Durban, KwaZulu-Natal. Lee, November 2022, Durban North, Durban, KwaZulu-Natal. Can we give a moment of silence for the fellows who moved on to the meeting in the sky? Thank you. We will remember that. Okay. Before we move on to our that you're all somber and serious. Can we move on to, before we start the meeting, before we go on to sharing about not being a glam lot, we will ask to do the seventh tradition now. We're doing the seventh tradition now because we can see some of you are going to run out of here without participating in your recovery and contributing. So we have bags that will be going around. Bags at the back. Okay, people who are watching you, some of you are like, You put in the bag, you don't take out the bag. This is not Christmas. Remember, put in, leave it in. Ooh. And while we're doing our seventh tradition, for those of you who missed the first few meetings and who only got in for the main meeting, you missed a lot. Okay, apparently we're not supposed to gossip in AA, but hey, I'll make amends later. The earlier meetings, we had people modeling their knock knees, you know. We had trip shows happening right here. We had... Yes, him! We had people sharing about the things that you really missed out. Nail salons. Apparently nail salons are a great place to drink. It's too late now. You can't go back to drink. Okay, I'm watching people there. Looks like some people are wanting to take change. No, do not take change. If you don't have change, just put in whatever you have. Leave it there. It will go for a good cause. Just remember, one alcoholic sharing experience, strength and hope. Yes, that's how we pass on the message, but one alcoholic sharing experience, strength and hope does not print the thousands of big books. Not so? Am I wrong? Yes. The pamphlets that we hand out to newcomers. I'm watching that to say the meeting halls that we all meet together as a fellowship. So donate, participate in your recovery. Okay, that bag is not moving at the back. Don't look in the back, people. You'll be tempted. Just put in. Close your eyes and put in. We're doing whatever. Thank you. Okay. I'll be handing over to our chairperson for the next meeting, our own Frankie. Our topic for this meeting, what? We are not a glam lot. But you're all looking a bit serious now. I liked you a bit earlier on, you were laughing and stuff. Now you're all glam and what? Come on. No mind. No, you hurt yourself. So can we just give one last round of applause for our panel for the opening meeting, who will be telling us, we are not a glam lot. Do you have a hangover? Is your bed dry? You haven't vomited today? You got money in the bank? Well, yeah. Police looking for you. Okay, some of us feel consequences, you know. So cheer up, let's have some fun. Just for today, we are free.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Frank, and I am an alcoholic. Thank you. And it's just wonderful to be here. And especially in my hometown to see, and thank you to everybody who supported it. Welcome to all our visitors from all over the country. Welcome to those members who are not with Alcoholics Anonymous. Welcome to Al-Anon too. Welcome to everybody. Just, it's good to have you here. Our theme, we are not a glum lot, and my little thing here says that I am to introduce myself, which I think I've done. So my home group is the YANA group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My sobriety date is the 21st of June, 2002. I want you to take note of the 21st of June. I stayed sober for the longest night of the year. My sponsor tells me it was the shortest day, but I'm going for the longest night. Yeah. And my sponsor is Mike, and all those things are important to me. Those of you who know me know that I'm involved in service, and we heard from earlier on from our World Service Delegate, our second term World Service Delegate, I am, by the grace of God and because things beyond my wildest dreams happen, I am the first term World Service Delegate. Now, thank you. I have to tell you, despite the looks, I was quite a keen sportsman in my years. And I played cricket. And I dreamt of representing my country as a cricket player. And here I am, representing my country as a drunk. How very cool is that? But let's get on with the meeting. And get the... I'm going to ask, please, Anna-Marie. The reason I asked Anna-Marie to do the reading this evening was because I've heard her do it without a script. She can recite it, and she does it with dramatics, and I've asked her to do that. She says she's not going to do it, so please give her a bit of an encouragement. Yeah. Anna Marie.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Anna Marie. I'm an alcoholic. Chapter 5, How It Works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. They are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was no until we let go, absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us, but there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. We came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. We admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. We continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear 3 pertinent ideas. A. That we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B. That probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C. That God could and would if he were sought.
And then, to read the traditions, those things that say Alcoholics Anonymous from us, it's my pleasure to invite Yanni up. Yanni and I walked this path together for the last 20 odd years. So Yanni, you can come up for that.
Thank you, Frank. Leaving friends, brothers and sisters, my name is Yanni and I am an alcoholic. The 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4. Each group should be anonymous, except in that is affecting other groups or IA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffer. 6. An IA group ought never endorse, finance or lend IA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. This problem of money, property and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues,
Hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relation policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio and films. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you to our readers. Thank you very much. In a meeting the last week and this afternoon, it spoke about us, how we've been given the power to help others. And that's always been one of the best things that for me could happen in AA. I love doing speaking to the newcomers. So I get a call from somebody who's been, and she tells me that her sister is staying with her, that just arrived here from Zimbabwe, and her sister's got a problem. Would I go and have a chat? So I get a lady from our group, and we go around and we visit these two ladies, and they're from Zimbabwe, which is my hometown, so I have a bit of a soft spot for them immediately. And they're also very attractive young ladies, and I have a soft spot for very attractive young ladies. And, so I'm very impressed with this, and I'm very keen to help. And Chrissy, especially the drunk, is a very attractive young lady. A couple of days later, I get a call from the sister. It was Chrissy and Jilly. So Jilly phones me, the sister, and she says, "Chrissy's been drinking again. This is terrible. Now she's gone next door to try and get a job. We need help." So I phone the lady. We went the first time. We go around. We go look for Chrissy. She's gone next door. She's gone across the road to look for a job. And across the road is the 509. Now, I don't know how many of you are familiar. I know this is finance. I know a lot of you know this. The 509 is like a brothel. Kind of way I can think of it. In Benoni. And she goes there and she's looking for a job as a barmaid, right? And the owner of the brothel has asked her please to show him her breast, which is not an unreasonable request if you own a brothel and you're distributing booze. And she's taken an exception to this. And she's screaming and she's shouting and she's ready, just gone completely bursting. And the owner's threatened to phone the police, and that's what I walk into. I walk into this place and there she is. And so I calm her down and she sees me and she relaxes. And so I'm starting to take her out of the room, right? We started to leave, the guys agreed not to come, and then suddenly it occurs to see again. And it's like that second wind, and she just goes for this guy again and starts swearing and cursing. And I don't know what to do. So I pick her up, she's not that big, and I put her over my shoulder. And I carry out of that place into my car. So I have carried, in sobriety, a woman out of a bottle. Now, I don't know what to do with this girl. So, what do you do? When you don't know what to do with something like this, I'm going to take her home to my wife. So I stick in the car, and off we go, and we take her home. And we get home, and she's still a little bit ballistic, and she's throwing stuff around the place, and it's all a little bit, it's a little bit anxious and awkward. And finally, Sue, my wife, has some whiskey in her house, so she gives it to her, and she passes that and goes to bed. And the next morning, Sue goes through, and Chrissy's there with that hangover, and she's sitting there and she's saying, "You know, Sue, I went to this place to say, look for a job, and they asked me to take my top off." And Sue says, and "I wouldn't do that." And she says, "Yes, I know, that's really good, Chrissy, well done. I'm glad you didn't do that." She says, "You know, I think that place is a brothel. And do you know, I saw Frank there with another woman." Now, so why do I tell you this story? We experience people in this fellowship who've gone through hell. Most of us have gone through something in our lives. A lot of us we've seen lives destroyed, we've seen families lost, jobs lost, and we've experienced some real hard times in our lives. And we see it in other people. But what we also see is the humor. And I think that's something that we have that is unique to Alcoholics Anonymous. We see this and we look back at it. And incidents like that, which in and of themselves are not particularly funny, but we understand it and we look at it and we smile and we laugh. Because we know exactly what was going on in Chrissy's head. and we can laugh at that. And I firmly believe that the sound of recovery is laughter. And that's why I love this theme. We are not a glum lot. So, let me introduce my speakers for the evening. And it's a great honor to share this panel specifically. Can I ask you to put the lights on our speakers, please? So they can see it. I think so, yes. Okay, so from Al-Anon we have Marlene, who I've also known for most of my sobriety. As an Al-Anon adult child, we have Renette, and I'm sure many of you know Renette in her other role as one of us alcoholics, and it's great to have her there. And then perhaps one of the guys who's been very influential in my sobriety, it's an honor to share this platform with Pravesh. They're going to speak in that order, and I'm going to now hand over to Marlene. The floor is yours, Clark.
Good evening, friends. My name is Marlene, and I'm a grateful member of the Al-Anon family group. My home group is Valkafield and Park in Randburg. So it's just so amazing to be here. Trying to adjust my mic. Thank you. Oh, thank you, Brent. Okay, that's better. Yeah, it's just so amazing. I was here from the morning, and it's just been such an amazing convention of experience so far. Just to see all these happy faces, it's what recovery does for us. And the theme of we are not a glum lot. Every one of us sitting here is such a reflection of that. We just not a glum lot today. We know how to be happy, we know how to laugh, even at ourselves, and that is the joy of recovery. I also want to welcome everyone to this 2023 Alcoholics Anonymous National Convention here in Pretoria. I do know that I was reminded, because this morning when I shared that meeting, I was reminded that there's not only South Africans in the room, there's people from Africa. So I just want to welcome the whole of Africa here this evening. Thank you to the Convention Committee of Alcoholics Anonymous for asking me to share my Al-Anon story this evening. It's such an honor to be able to share my experience, strength, and hope, and how I evolved from this very, very sorry, glum person into the very happy, peaceful person that you see standing here through my program of recovery. As I reflect on this theme, we're not a glum lot, I am filled with immense gratitude to my higher power and to my Al-Anon program. I reflect on my entry into the rooms in the early days, and there are some of my friends sitting here who saw me in those early days when I walked in. My first meeting and how I sat crying through the whole meeting, wallowing in self-pity and so consumed with my sorry loss in life. I must have been a glum, pitiful sight to behold. I had my 14-year-old daughter with me in the Al-Anon room. In those early days, I was not aware that there is a program of recovery for our children called Al-Anon. The members in that meeting were so patient with me. They said to me, that I will not get everything that first night, but I must just keep coming back and I will get what they have. I certainly wanted what they had, the smiling faces and their calm and gentle disposition. Those joyous phrases were all the attraction I needed to keep coming back, and I did. In the room, I was asked to take my hands off my drinking husband and to place it on myself. This was a huge ask for me, as I had lost the ability to focus on me. Up until this point, my whole life evolved around my drinking husband. Who was he drinking with, how much he was spending on the alcohol, who his friends were, what time he was leaving home, what time he was coming back home. The poor man, and that's my husband Rajan, my late husband, may his soul rest in peace. He was probably only too happy to be out of the house than to be at home with a glum, nagging fishwife. Nevertheless, I was willing to give it a try, to place my hands on me and to stop focusing so much on my drinker. As I made meetings and put the program to work in my life, I noticed that there was a change that was taking place within me. Maybe not as quickly as I wanted it to, but it was happening. The evolution towards a much calmer and serene Marlene was the image that was being revealed to the people around me. The glum, sorry me, was becoming a thing of the past. My world opened up to so many learnings in the rooms of Al-Anon. I learned that alcoholism is a disease, and there is no cure for this disease. I learned that it can only be arrested one day at a time through a program like Alcoholics Anonymous. So I started to view the drinkers around me with much more understanding and compassion. I embraced the one day at a time concept in my own life, sometimes even reducing it to living my life a second at a time. I started letting go of the fear that plagued my thoughts and replaced it with positive and energizing thoughts and actions. Today, I belong to a fellowship that has taught me how to laugh, use my imagination, and to have fun. My late husband Rajan, my reason for entering the doors of Al-Anon, decided to walk through the doors of AA some 2 weeks after I joined Al-Anon. By his own admission, it was initially out of curiosity to see where I was going and what was bringing about this positive change from a fishwife to a calm, gentle woman. One would often hear him say that he came for the wrong reason, but stayed for the right one. His entry into Alcoholics Anonymous helped him to stop drinking right up until the day that he died of cancer on the 25th of November, 2011. Exactly 12 years and 5 months to the day that he's made his entry into Alcoholics Anonymous. So miracles do happen in this program. Some of the tools that has assisted me in turning my world around and which has helped me move away from the glum lost brigade is I learned the power of prayer and meditation and the benefit of building this into my daily, mornings every day as my own daily practice. Reading my 3 Al-Anon readers is also a habit that I've built into my daily routine. One may ask, why do you have to do this every day? So just to coin a common phrase that I hear in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, repetition confirms habit and faith becomes natural. So I've been in his room quite a few days, and there is power. For me, there is such power in that statement. Repetition confirms habit, and faith becomes natural. The joy of recovery is also epitomized in the way I put the 12 steps, adopted from Alcoholics Anonymous, to use in my life today. These steps can be categorized into four groups: giving up, owning up, making up, and keeping up. As I reflect on these 12 steps, I realize that the first three steps are about giving up. I can't, God can, and I must just let Him. I needed to give up the illusion that I can control people and situations, and that I can manage my life on my own. Steps 4 to 6 are about owning up. In these steps, I reflect on and seek the truth about my strengths and my weaknesses. I need to reveal these truths to God, to myself, and to another human being, and then to avail myself to God to remove my defects of character. Steps 7 to 9 are about making up. I need to continually look at my broken relationships with God, with myself, and those that I interact with. I need to see my part in how these relationships have become damaged, and ask my higher power, what can I do to make amends and make up for the harm that I've done? So why do I keep coming back? The fourth category of the 12 steps, steps 10 to 12, are about keeping up. I needn't try to keep up with others anymore. The only person I need to keep up with me is me and my growth in this program of recovery. Carrying the message to those who are still suffering keeps me grateful and focused. I need to be always mindful of the Al-Anon declaration, which is, if anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help, let the hand of Al-Anon and Al-Atee always be there, and let it begin with me. The other tools that I use to be able to keep me away from the glum lot today is our slogans in Al-Anon, you know, like keep it simple, let go and let God, and live and let live, to name just a few. It's also reading my conference-approved literature and studying my Al-Anon program, which helps me keep both my feet in this wonderful God-given program of recovery. Al-Anon, for me today, I've decided is a way of life. So I need to be knowledgeable about this new way of life. I need to read and study my literature, and so that I continue to be this joyous person, to be a reflection of what recovery is. It is about the attraction, right? And not the promotion. So I need to be that attraction of the joy of being in recovery in this program, what it's all about. And as I was preparing my talk, I came across this reading in one of our daily readers, which is The Courage to Change, and it's on page 325 of November 20th. Okay, although there are many ways to tame a horse, there is general agreement on one point. The important thing is not to break the horse's spirit. Colts, puppies, and little children are full of boundless joy in being alive. And I know that because I'm a new granny. My little grandchild is 10 months old. So I know what it is about to just have that spiritual connection with an innocent little baby. And she will only let grandma put her off to sleep. I don't know what she's going to do tonight, what the parents are going to do, but I'm here. Right? So what happens to my joy? Alcoholism, which has touched every generation of my family, had broken my spirit. Al-Anon gives me a fellowship, a sponsor, and 12 steps and traditions that allow me to heal my broken spirit. My healing started when I quit fighting the God of other people's understanding and found a God who honored the long-forgotten spirit in me. That's the God who can restore me to my true self. Today, I make a sincere effort to roll in clover, kick up my heels, and celebrate being alive. It is one way in which I touch my God. Today's reminder, let me make this day, a celebration of the Spirit. There is a part of me that retains a childlike sense of curiosity, wonder, enthusiasm, and delight. I may have lost touch with it, but I know it still exists. I will set my problems to the side, and for a little while, and appreciate what it means to be vitally alive. And the quote, which is taken from one of George Bernard Shaw's excerpts, life is no brief candle flame. It is a sort of splendid torch which I have got to hold up for the moment, and I want to make it to burn as brightly as possible before handing it on to a future generation. So that's me, and I want to wish every one of you a great convention experience. Thank you for listening to me. May God, as you understand him, bless and keep you in the palm of his hand.
Good evening, friends. My name is Renette. Now I've got to remember not... Okay, wait. I'm a double winner, babe. And I'm a... You know what? I'm so blessed to be a double winner. When I look across here, I see miracles. I see beautiful, beautiful miracles. And it's just amazing. Give yourself a clap. Thank you to the convention committee, everybody that put this together. It's absolutely, I'm in awe of the venue, in awe of the setup, and of everything that has been done to put this convention 2023 together. Thank you, Frank, for asking me to cheer on this beautiful people on this panel. It's an absolute honor. You know, I'm a double winner because I didn't fit in from that high. So I'm going to just do a quick one and say I became a tomboy because Oriel's hair was longer than mine. And I thought, I don't fit in. Hell no. You know? So let me join with the cousin boys, which was Benjamin and Nolan and them, where I felt comfortable. I could not feel comfortable enough in my own skin. Okay? I grew up in an alcoholic home, raving lunatic of an alcoholic home, and I have two siblings who are also in Alcoholics Anonymous. My sister is here this evening as well. And in this home, I just want to tell you quickly what I saw, my story. They laugh at me because I used to teach the flowers. The flowers was my safety net. Because when I was alone with my parents and maybe alone with Lizanne and Fred, you have to know what I'm talking about, they'd invite, if they were full blast, I mean, if they were drinking through the window, bringing those brown bottles through the window, they'd call anybody from the street to drink with them. And somehow I knew that wasn't okay. And so I sit by the flowers and I teach the flowers and I go into flower lane. And today I love nature and I love hiking. And it's my place. It's my church. It's my everything. And so fast forward, my fear, because that's all I felt. I cannot tell you fear of what. I cannot. It was unknown fear. My fear stirred on a defense mechanism of anger. So I knew I was constantly filled with anger. The brother that I'm a baby of 8, 4 boys, 4 girls, and they're all alive. We're orphans now, but we look after each other. We are crazy lost, but we love each other. And I've learned to love my siblings as they are. And I learned that in the Al-Anon group, Al-Anon adult children. I couldn't just love them as they were. I wanted to fix and save and change them. And I had to learn to let go. So, quickly, when I first met, my first marriage was not because I loved James. Hell no. I was going to fix and save him and make him into what I thought he should be. And lo and behold, he became my project. And so my project died. You know, got 3 kids. And when my project died, I fell to pieces because I didn't have a project to work on anymore. He just got a permanent job and we were going to have this beautiful home that was in my head. You see, I always believed that the world and everybody in it should conform to my thoughts and my thinking and my beliefs. But it doesn't work that way. I've learned in these programs that I need to conform to the world to be at peace and contentment with myself. And so when those wheels came off, I need to tell you about that. When those wheels came off, I went into full-blown alcoholism. So our preamble in Al-Anon Adult Children talks about we marry alcoholics, we become alcoholics, or we marry workaholics. So it's a mixture of a whole lot of things, you know what I'm saying? It's like a crazy. So I remember, you know, that trip of going into full-blown alcoholism lasted for exactly 18 months after his death. But it brought me to my knees. When Zod spoke about moving around with a knife, I identified. I moved around with a panga. You know? And it was this anger that I had. But deep down, in the root of it all, was the fear. Because fear is the one that leads on every other defect of character. Fear coupled with pride. Fear tells me to control so that I feel safe. It's an illusion of safety. I've learned that in these rooms, in the rooms of the Al-Anon group. And together with these groups, I've become this woman that I am today, which I couldn't believe I am. Because I was afraid. I heard when I was little, they'd say I was shy when I was very small. I don't think I was shy. I was extra bang. I was as scared as a rat, you know. If you saw a rat, it runs away. I was dead scared of life, of just life itself. And so, I got my teachings of sobriety and of sort of emotional balance in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I'd reached my 10-year, and there was a hole in the soul. By then I had married Morris. He's late. He was also in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when we got married, I said to him, I'm feeling like empty. I'm doing service, I've got sponsors, I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do. Why do I feel so empty? And I just floated about, and I kept doing. And so this one evening I went to the St. Francis meeting, the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, And the AAC meeting was on, and everybody was coming out. And I've asked Mr. D if I could mention his name. And he was coming out of the meeting. And he greeted me and he said, "Hey Ray, how are you doing?" And I said, "I'm good, but my mother is drinking. And my children. And Morris. And this. And that." And I just had this list of complaints. And he said, "Hang on. I asked how you doing." And you know, I was about to zap him, because I thought, bugger off. And he said, "I think you should try this meeting." I don't need that meeting. I mean, I have 10 years of sobriety. But that penny dropped. But I went to the St. Francis AA meeting. And a couple of weeks later, I thought, you know what? Let me just entertain him and go to that meeting. And I did. And I sat in the back row. And that, in those days, that meeting was packed. Now it's not as many people there, but it was packed. There was a back row. And I sat in the back row and I judged. I sat there with all the ankles. "Yes, it's sober." You know, and there was everybody inside crying. And I said, "Oh, can they pull your socks up? I mean, seriously. They're crying for what?" You know, and I sat there with all my judgment. But I kept going back. And I kept going back. And then I started sitting in the front row. Because I thought, okay, there's something that's making sense here. Let go of others. Okay? You know, keep the woolly wolf around yourself. And what's inside the woolly wolf is your business. Outside the woolly wolf is none of your business. Easy for you to say. But I thought, okay, let's try and practice this. And one day they asked, "Who wants a sponsor?" And up with my hand, and I was so angry with myself. I said, "But I've got a sponsor." And I turned down, and I didn't. And I got a sponsor. And we worked with the 12 steps through the Al-Anon books, Paths to Recovery, and whatever literature we had. And I started finding a depth to my ism, a depth, a root to the fear. And I started dealing with that. And with this, my mom was sick at that time. She was sick for a couple of years. And Morris kept saying, "Go back, go see her before she dies, because if she dies, you'll regret it," or whatever. And I kept going to see her. But I wanted to go and change her. I wanted her to pull up her socks. I'd forgotten it doesn't work that way. And so one day I sat in the lounge. We've got a two-bedroom with a lounge and a kitchen, a bathroom and toilet together. And I sat in the lounge like this. And I said, if anybody puts their foot in here and brings some of the alcohol, they're going to have to deal with me. And I sat there for an hour and I thought, "No, the old girl is quiet, man. Let me go check on her." There were bubbles coming out of her mouth. She finished the nip of brandy. And I'm like, how? She had seen the helper that would bother for the brandy. And she said to the and I said, "How can you?" She said, "No, the old girl said, I mustn't tell you that I'm going to Ivy for a nip." Oh, I was so angry. So angry. Why can't she just get it? She got the big book next to her, but why can't she get it? And my focus was so on my mother's drinking that I lost focus on myself. And so with this program of AAC, I brought the focus back to Renee. And so with this trip back and forth, my sponsor would say, "But why are you staying with her? Find somewhere else to stay." And then I chose to stay with my nephew Fred, loving dearly. He was safe to stay with. You know, there was no question of this or that. It was just, that was the place to stay. And of course the guilt, when I left, and I say, "I'm going to stay by Fred." "Oh, why are you staying by Fred? It's my house, made of peace." You know, and then the shame and the remorse. And I'd be like, "Okay, maybe I'm going to stay with her." And then I'd leave. But slowly but surely, I managed to detach with love. I managed to look at her as an individual and not as the mother I expected her to be in my head. You know, that mother that I thought, okay, but now, come on. She's got to be sitting in an armchair with a blanket over her knees and glasses on to her, reading a story to all the grandchildren and having a cup of tea. Not her. Hell no. You know? And she was, she had a mouth that was vile. She really did. And this, I had to work through these expecting everybody. That's why, you know, that expectations is my, the minute I go into expectation, I get resentful. And I know that I've got to let it go. I know that I've got to let the alcoholic be the alcoholic. Let other people be who they are. I've also learned that I didn't cause the alcoholic to drink. I can't cure the alcoholic. And I cannot control the alcoholic. And I know I'm a control freak myself, which I daily have to work at. And so towards the end of this up and down and this visiting, there was a difference in me. And I said to Edith, man, mommy's changed. She said, hell no, she's not changed. You know? And that's when I realized there must be a difference in me because I felt empathy for her. I looked at her differently. I didn't look at her as the mother I wanted her to be, but I looked at her, and as my sponsor said then, look at her as a newcomer. What would you do with a newcomer? Would you judge them? Would you expect them? Would you try to control them? You just love them when they walk in, and you tell them it's going to be okay. And when I looked at her with different eyes, change perception. You know, the spiritual change they talk about, you've got to work at it. Yes, God gives it to you, but you've got your part in it as well. There's action that needs to be taken. And so towards the end of her life, that last week, you know, it's so beautiful. And I thought, no, there's something wrong with the old girl. She's really changed. And I said to you, bitch, you better come here so she can swear you, man, and bring some life into the party here. It's a bit boring. Because she loves swearing, all of us. And, Yvette came and it was okay. But then the Friday, she looked so beautiful and serene. And she said, she chased us out and she said, okay, 8, I want to sleep. But she looked good. And the next day, she died. She had a stroke and she died. And we were all there to witness it. And I was there to witness it. And it was a beautiful, beautiful passing on. And I didn't expect to feel that way about my mother. Because I couldn't connect with her. She most probably couldn't connect with me as well and with the other daughters as well. I think there was a disconnection. However, with the program of Al-Anon, of the adult child, I continued working this program. And when they said to Morris that Morris got cancer in 2016, it was at a convention in Cape Town that we went to. And we couldn't actually attend the meetings because he was out of breath. And then on the Monday we found out he went to the doctor and was called in to the oncology center. Obviously he's got cancer and he had cancer of the lungs. And in 2000, that was in 2016, and then they said he had a reprieve. And then by 2017 we were called in. And they said, there's nothing more we can do for you. You know? And he was more worried about me than I, you know, he said, I'm worried about you. You've got to go to that upper place. That's what he called it. Keep going to that upper place. It seems to be working for you. And I did. I kept going. And even when I was afraid to go, when I was afraid that when I left, he'd die while I was away, I still went because I knew it was good for me. And it helped me to let go of him throughout his passing, you know, before he passed on. It helped me to let go of me and just allow myself to be who I am. There's been a lot of change around me with my children. I think I have a healthy relationship with them, something which is beyond my wildest dreams. I couldn't have a relationship with them because I grew up in an alcoholic home, and I grew up, you know, we were shamed. But now it's different. It's a different way to live. It is a different way to live. I am a very grateful double winner. I'm a grateful alcoholic, and I'm a grateful adult child. And thank you for allowing me to share my story with you.
Good evening, friends. My name is Travis, and I'm an alcoholic. And it is by the grace of God and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and this wonderful program that I'm sober today. Congratulations to Johan and the team on a wonderful convention. Thank you so much for the fine hospitality and the great meetings, and to everyone who shared here. Thank you so much. Thank you, Frank. I received a call about a month ago at about 8 a.m. Frank says, I need a speaker for the main meeting, and you are it. And he cut the call. And he messed up my morning. And I picked up the phone and I called Frank again, and I said, Frank, thank you for the loving invitation for me to speak at this convention. And he says, that wasn't an invitation, that was an instruction. Bloody hell, I spent half my adult life fighting instructions that came from Pretoria. And now these people are sending instructions, and I'm sober. I wasn't going to take this, but thanks, Frank. Thank you for messing up my weekend. And just to set the record straight, you know, no one has left us yet. Sure, my reputation preceded me. If you got to a function and you saw people leaving, you must know that I would have arrived. Frank said I had an influence in his sobriety. Definitely not the part where he carried the woman out of the brothel. I would never have that influence on him. Why waste that opportunity and carry them out? Just a few records to be set straight. There was some talk this morning, or maybe one record, about non-alcoholic beer. Two speakers mentioned that. And I just want to tell you that non-alcoholic beer is for non-alcoholics. So if you're alcoholic, no. Then in our service meeting there was talk about non-alcoholic trustee and alcoholic trustee. So, for those who may be wondering who these people are, in the AA context, the non-alcoholic can drink and the alcoholic can't drink. So, those are the Class A trustees that we are speaking about. My sobriety date is the 29th of June 1991, but that date belongs to God and Alcoholics Anonymous. And I say just as someone who is here and who is fairly new and is wondering if long-term sobriety is possible. Yes, it is. But it's about what I do with my sobriety and my program today. Each day I have the opportunity, do I go to my recovery or do I go to my illness? And I chose to go to my recovery. I'm sitting here reflecting, 33 years ago at this meeting, at the main meeting, I raised my hand as a newcomer. And the meeting was held at the Bramfontein Civic Center, and the theme of that convention was Better Than Gold. And the keynote speaker was Shadrach Kay. May his soul rest in peace. He had an influence on me that evening. I wanted to stay sober. I knew that I had a problem. And I want to remember the other giants that I met. How I missed hearing, the stars belong to the sky, and the leaves belong to the trees, and the sharks belong to the ocean, and I belong to Alcoholics Anonymous. We missed those guys. I miss my first sponsor, Ezekiel, Tokyo. I miss Frank. I miss my dad today, Percy. He was 21 years sober until he died. He brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous. He took me to my first meeting. My dad had 2 years of formal schooling. And I had a post-matric qualification and I couldn't stay sober. This illness of alcoholism is not only for the degraded, it's for the degreed as well. I didn't study at this university, I didn't study at any university, but I got a PhD. I'm a pretty heavy drinker. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous 33 years ago, but I sobered up for 14 months later. Every time things got bad, I came here just to sort those things out. And when they got better, I'd forgotten why I'd come here. And for those of you who are counting days, and 1 week sober, and a month sober, and whatever, it has been my experience that it is easier to stay here than it is to get here. And every time I tried to get back to these rooms, it wasn't that I couldn't fit through the door. It's just that my head had gotten so big and my head couldn't fit through these doors. I suffer from an illness that resides in my head and is controlled by my ego and my fears. And I've heard that the greatest distance that any alcoholic has to travel is the distance between his head and his heart. And we have to concede to our innermost self. And it is only when this message reaches my heart that I'm able to reach a point of acceptance. Because what acceptance does, it cancels out reservations. It cancels out the doubts that I had. Do I belong here? Am I really an alcoholic? Maybe the brandy would be better. And all of those questions, combined with my youth, I was 24 years when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. Combined with my youth, my education, and the fact that there was a stigma being attached to me being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, conspired either collectively or individually on a daily basis to keep me drunk. And for the next 14 years, I was a multiple or a serial entrant into Alcoholics Anonymous. Just to tell you that I belong here, I was a school teacher. I resigned just for the December holidays. And I went back. And on the first day I get to the school and I meet the principal, and he greeted me and he asked me, "Do you drink?" He should have asked me what subject I taught. He asked me, "Do you drink?" And anyway, of course, my resentment built up for that guy. And then he says, "Well, go and introduce yourself to the staff." And I get to about a meter away from a gentleman I'd never seen in my life. And as I get close to him, he says, "They're only sending alcoholics to the school." My reputation has preceded me. Eventually, on the 29th of June, on the 26th of June 1991, and the 26th of June is an international day for substance abuse and alcohol awareness, etc. And I had this lesson, because I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm not so bad, I picked up a few things and I conducted this lesson with my form class about alcoholism and all of these things. Became a bit emotional because I grew up in an alcoholic home too. My dad was a drunk. And, I wrote all of these things on the chalkboard. And when I walked out and I walked back into the board, and the chalkboard at the bottom of the board was written, "Practice what you preach." My humiliation was complete. It was the humiliation that was necessary for me to get back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got here because I knew AA worked. I knew that AA worked. And on the 29th of June 1991, I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I got here, and these people were in my resentment list for a long, long time. Those people that were here told me, "Meetings, meetings, meetings." And they told me, "Meeting makes us naked." Hey, I couldn't make anything. I mean, I got married in sobriety. I met my wife in sobriety, and one of the first things I told her was that I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and my friend commented that that was the worst pickup line he's ever heard. We had our children in sobriety. And these people didn't want to listen to me. They didn't want to live with me. My family didn't see me drink. My wife didn't see me drink. But they didn't escape alcoholism. And if you come here to think that drinking is your problem, you're going to die of alcoholism. This illness progresses more rapidly when I'm not drinking. And my family had experienced that. And how ungrateful were these people? I mean, what would someone else give for a sober husband, a sober dad? And they don't want to live with me, bloody hell. And I refused. My ego won't allow me to look at myself. And when the God of my understanding wants my undivided attention, He will bring me down on my knees. And the pain of living became greater than the pain of drinking. And that's a low place to be. The pain of living became greater than the pain of drinking. He brought me onto my knees in matters of my relationship, my finances, my humility, my teachability, and everything that He wanted my attention with. And He brought me there. By this time I had to find a sponsor. And this sponsor, now the best thing about this relationship with my sponsor is that he knows he's my sponsor. Previously he'd asked me, do you have a sponsor? And I'd say, of course, Frank is my sponsor. Why? Frank has got good quality sobriety. So if I tell people that Frank is my sponsor, they will think, hey, he's got good quality sobriety as well. This is not a spectator sport. Alcoholics Anonymous is not a spectator sport. We don't sober up osmotically. If you want what we have and are willing to go to any lake to get it, what is it that I have today that the newcomer is going to be willing to go to any lake to get it? And the other thing about this thing is that, you know, we say that the newcomer, is the newcomer really new to us? We know that this guy will try and lie to us that he's not drinking and he's drinking. We know that he'll tell us that he's got a lot of work to do. All of a sudden, 5 days sober, he needs to spend some time with the family. We know that they will tell us all of these things. Is the newcomer really new to us or is he new to recovery? He is new to recovery. So when he comes to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, he must find recovery. He must find recovery. Now in my case, the 1 hour that I spent at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous was the easiest thing for me to work this program. And when I finally found my last sponsor, the image that I portrayed of myself in this 1 hour at these meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous wasn't congruent for the other 23 hours of my life. I wasn't wearing the badge of Alcoholics Anonymous with distinction. And I was proud to tell people that I was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I was this bad ambassador. And so, eventually my sponsor said, you've got a problem with Rusty, you've got a problem with Frank, you've got a problem with Yutika. Well, she's my wife, I have a problem with her. And he said, what about you? And he pointed out to me that recovery is from the inside out, not from the outside in. That my peace of mind and my serenity and my happiness are based on what I do with myself, rather than the external factors. And he pulled out these sheets of paper and he took me to the fourth step and I said, hey, I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous for a short while, I don't think this would be bad, so I printed out a few of those sheets. And then I needed a few more, and then I needed a few more, and I needed more. And eventually, that inventory ended up like 69 pages. Meetings every day. And I think in the pamphlet, A Member's Eye View of Alcoholics Anonymous, it warns us about telling the guy, keep coming back until something happens. I was keep coming back and something did happen. Rigor mortis set in. Rigor mortis of my sobriety has set in. Because all I was doing is I was just coming back and putting my bum on the seat. And I was doing nothing about this illness. I grew up in an alcoholic home. And the other thing about this illness is that it is about the inability to give and receive love. And my mom and my dad loved me, but they didn't know how to show love to me. If you ever had the privilege of seeing me after I get out of the shower, and I'm applying lotion to my body, you will find that I don't know. Because that's how my mom rubbed lotion onto my body when we were little. Because she was so angry with my dad on the night before that she just continued that anger rubbing the lotion onto my body. And I'd watch my wife, she would, oh, sweetheart, you look so lovely. And not me now, for the children. How is it possible to use those words? I mean, if my mother used those words on me, I probably thought she didn't like me. But she loved me, she just didn't know how to show it. She was so busy fighting with my dad about his drinking. It's the inability to give and receive love. And I wasn't able to give and receive love in this home that I, in my marriage. And therefore these people didn't want to live with me. And I had to look at myself. And in those 69 pages of inventory, you know, I had a field day in the first three columns because it was about everyone else. And then I had to look at the part where it was about me. And when you self-centered and dishonest and selfish 150 times, hey, you got a problem. And you're coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and doing service. And you got good friends like Frank. Nothing changes if nothing changes. My selfishness and my self-centeredness allows me to be easily offended by other people. And because I am selfish and self-centered, no matter how good your intentions are, you will upset me and you will offend me. Because the exact nature of my wrongdoing was that I was God in my life and I was God in everyone else's life. And he tells me that I have to quit playing God. And step three is only a conversation that I will have with God until I do step four. The action that I take in step four, taking that inventory, verifies that decision that I made to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. And I found out who I was. And at this point in time, there were a group of guys that I met at a meeting, and they told me, we'd like to be like you. Because they probably saw me for 1 hour only. And they liked to be like me at a time when I didn't like to be like myself. And this was followed by, of course, a very long 6-hour conversation with my sponsor. And you would find that I had no problem communicating with you people. I think I'm fairly confident. Do I sound nervous? But when I spoke to Frank, I mean, Doug, and I started talking about my first step, I couldn't put those sentences. It was the most vulnerable moment in my life. Because I was exposed. But it was also the most liberating time of my life. And we went through this. And that was over. And we never chatted again. And I phoned him 2 weeks later and I said, hello Doug. And he told me, hello Professor. He says, what have you left out in your first step? And another 45 minutes and I told him something about my relationship with my mom that I thought I'd never tell anyone else. And after that conversation, for the first time in my life, I was able to tell my mom that I love her. And I tell it to her now as well when I talk to her. For the first time in my life, I could be in the same room as my mom and not be angry. I will be quiet. Her resentment is going to be built up. Now I can see his hands going on that. Just added it to my resentment list. Was that the 5 minutes or was it shut up? It was 5 minutes. And of course, you know, and then he told me, you're going to be stomping on 6 and 7 for a long time. God! 6 and 7 is not this big fanfare where your sponsor gives you a hug and puts down the meal when you're having the first step and snacks and all of those things. It's a solitary affair between you and God. Where you're getting used to your getting rid of those default settings. Like in the taxi pull up in front of you, you want to swear the guy, you want to honk, slam your brakes, swearing, middle finger and everything else. And now you've got to stop doing that. And sometimes I don't do that. And if Al-Anon is working on that day, I'll just get a look. But if Al-Anon is not working, I'll get a psychometric analysis. And I didn't even have to get authorization from the medical aid for that consult. And I'll just go on and I'll start humming a song, you know. Now my favorite song is, what's my song? Hi, it's me. I'm the problem, it's me. And so I had to work on these defects of character. And the thing about this thing is, like, it's like giving up nicotine, it's like giving up sugar, it's like giving up caffeine. There are periods of withdrawal. And it is during these periods of withdrawal that I find God. And I ask God to remove the uncertainty of the unknown, the anxiety of the unknown, because I don't know a life without defects of character. I don't know a life without that, because it was my go-to place. So this is what my illness uses to keep me in bondage. No matter how long I'm coming here, my illness is always just waiting here at the corner, doing a few press-ups, waiting for a moment of vulnerability. Waiting for the day Al-Anon doesn't work and it makes me succumb to the temptation of the argument. I've finished tonight. Frank, I'm coming home with you. All of this is your fault. Today I try not to pitch up to that argument. I try to be the quietest person in the room, even if I'm the only person. Because sometimes the volume in my head gets so loud. And I gotta quieten that volume. I gotta quieten that disturbance in my head. I gotta quieten that disturbance in my head to move from a place of internal turmoil to serenity. Because it tells me when I do that, I'd be able to match calamity with serenity. And we will know peace. So where's the time to be glum when there's so much work? And sometimes I talk to my sponsees and they can even do gardening. I got so much to work with. If you want what we have and are willing to go to any length, there's this line in chapter 5. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing. There's two pictures there. One I got to grasp and two I got to develop. I grasp the idea of honesty, but do I develop that idea of honesty? And the only way I can develop it is through practicing it on a daily basis. Do I grasp and develop a manner of living which is free of resentment, free of anger, free of jealousy, free of fear, free of whatever? This is a full-time job. Being sober is a full-time job. Because our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And our real purpose is to be of maximum, to put ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the fellows about us. It's not about me. God didn't remove the obsession for me to be this great sage on the stage. He wants me to be the guide on the side. That's why He removed this obsession. And I'm going to close now. And someone spoke about Chuck C. And Chuck C said this, Father Ed Dowling, when someone asked him, what is heaven? He says, heaven is a new pair of glasses. And he says, if you ever find me in heaven, it would be backing away from hell. And when I walk these 12 steps, I back away from hell. My name is Suresh and I'm an alcoholic and I love you.
Thank you to our speakers. Wow, thank you. Perhaps another round of applause for all three of our speakers. I said at the beginning that Pravesh had been influential in my sobriety. Are there any questions? No. I'm sure you understand. Lynette spoke about the three C's of Al-Anon, and It's what it's cause, it's cure, and it's change and control. Yeah. Do you know that AA has three C's as well? We create chaos, we confuse, and then we conquer the buggers. And you spoke about you spoke a lot of good stuff, Martin. It was great to listen to. You also spoke about a grandchild. I had a grandchild about 6 years ago, and I wasn't going to be that grandfather because I'm not that guy. But I've become that grandfather in spades. That girl can do anything. Yes, sweetheart, what do you want next? And so we're sitting one day, I built this treehouse for her, right? And she's come to visit because she lives overseas, and we're up in the treehouse, and we're sitting, we're looking out, and we're having the Breakfast of Champions. And for those of you who don't know, the Breakfast of Champions is coffee for Grandpa and ice cream and chocolate sauce for the daughter, granddaughter. And we're sitting there, and she says, "Grandpa, I love you." It's like, oh, hot melts the whole bit. And I say, "Yeah, you love me because I give you ice cream and chocolate sauce for breakfast." She says, "No, Grandpa, you're different from other grown-ups." So I'm an alcoholic, and I want to feed this thing. So how am I different from other grown-ups, you know? And there's no response. And she sits silently for a while. And I thought she'd forgotten the question. And then she turns to me and she says, "You know, Grandpa, I think you're a growing down." And there is something. There's something to aspire to. Somebody spoke earlier about that childlike innocence and that getting back to that. I want to be a grown down. And in order to be a grown down, I cannot be glum. I need to enjoy this thing. And everything that I have today, my wife, my family, my job, my home, my car, everything that I have, I owe to you. And I am so grateful to be a part of this. And I'm so happy to be a part of this. Thank you for allowing me to be a part of this family. And thank you for allowing me to be part of this family. And I'd like to just give a small token of our appreciation to our people. Before I close the meeting this evening with the Serenity Prayer, do we have any announcements? We have no announcements. I've never heard her be speechless. So just a reminder then that we start again tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. Please come along for another great day of fellowship, of stories, and just of sharing our common journey and our common recovery. I'm going to ask you please to be upstanding. If you can hold hands, please do.
Serenity prayer.
Grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot.